नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद्भागवतम सिक्स कैंटो सेकंड चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 26। अहो मे परमं कष्टं अभूत् अविजितात्मनः। अहो मे परमं कष्टं अभूद् अविजितात्मनः येन विप्लावितं ब्रह्म वृषल्यां जायतात्मना।
Translation: Ajamil said, "Alas, being a servant of my senses, how degraded I became! I fell down from my position as a duly qualified brahmana and begot children in the womb of a prostitute." Purport: The men of the higher classes, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, do not beget children in the wombs of lower class women. Therefore, the custom in Vedic society is to examine the horoscopes of a girl and boy being considered for marriage to see whether their combination is suitable. Vedic astrology reveals whether one has been born in the Vipravarna, Kshatriyavarna, Vaishyavarna, or Shudravarna, according to the three qualities of material nature. This must be examined because a marriage between a boy of the Vipravarna and a girl of the Shudravarna is incompatible. Married life would be miserable for both husband and wife. Consequently, a boy should marry a girl of the same category. Of course, this is Traigunya, a material calculation according to the Vedas. But if the boy and girl are devotees, there need be no such considerations. A devotee is transcendental, and therefore in a marriage between devotees, the boy and girl form a very happy combination.
Manaha yena viplavitam brahma vrishalyam jayatatmana.
Ajamil said, "Alas, being a servant of my senses, how degraded I became. I fell down from my position as a duly qualified brahmana and begot children in the womb of a prostitute." Ajamil is lamenting here, shedding tears of repentant behavior, and there are quite a few places where devotees have expressed their remorse for shortcomings experienced in spiritual life. And Srila Prabhupada has treated this subject with extreme caution, extreme care, compassion. And for example, in the first canto, Arjuna's lamentation is treated in a different way. Ajamil's lamentation is being treated in a different way. And especially in this purport, I actually was in 2-3 minds as to how to understand this. In fact, just yesterday I was discussing this one sentence with a senior god brother, and half jokingly he said, "I don't agree with Prabhupada's conclusion." I said, "What do you mean you don't agree?" Prabhupada is saying here that a devotee is transcendental, therefore a marriage between devotees is a very happy combination. Well, history is not on our side. So how exactly do we understand? And as bulk of the class is brahmacharis here, one would expect that this would take the turn of, "So why didn't you control your senses and therefore give a very gung-ho class on avoid this whole thing altogether? That's the best thing." And Prabhupada has said that, that man is good, women is good, when they combine it is bad. At the same time, I was reading Satsarup Maharaj's book about letters from Srila Prabhupada, and there he begins one narration as to how marriages were arranged in the fledgling, budding ISKCON society in the early 70s. He said Prabhupada did not encourage the girls who had come there to pick and choose, nor did he force anyone. But one day, one girl came to Prabhupada and said, I want to marry A. And Prabhupada said, okay. Then another one came and said, I want to marry B. And Prabhupada said, that also is okay. So in a span of 2 weeks, three marriages took place in the Boston temple. And the president was like wondering, hey, what happened? You know, suddenly there are three devotees short. And you have to fill up the services. So maybe the first 15 or 20 years of this institution in ISKCON, there were more social, economic considerations than many other important considerations which are required for a stable grihastha ashram. In one lecture, Prabhupada says, where do you get good brahmacharis? You get good brahmacharis from the good grihastha ashram. So this is a cardinal principle. You can't escape the fact that good brahmacharis come from good grihastha ashram. And they become good vanaprasthis and good sannyasis later. So it seems that Srila Prabhupada acted in a way that many people felt was naive. He was not aware, or he just blindly felt that things will take care of themselves in the due course of time. But at least now, 30 years since ISKCON's inception, devotees are trying to understand what exactly is the import of this statement that there has to be compatibility, there has to be, all four ashrams need to be strong. It cannot be that one particular ashram is outstanding and others are laggards. I always mentally imagine a gymnasium, and I have been in one, where in that youthful zeal for a good body or good physique, there will be some people who would only work on their chest and arms, because these are the two parts of the body you can really expose by having kind of provocative clothing. And they neglect the legs. So what happens when this person has become very, very mature in that exercise? It looks as if his legs can barely support his torso. It appears very ugly. So similarly, there are institutions in India which say that no grihastha ashram. They're all fallen anyway. They're all uncontrolled, having uncontrolled senses. We don't need them. So you might see somewhere in the depth of some jungle, you know, Virakti ashram or Akhanda Brahmachari ashram. And not much preaching, just stay there. There are monasteries, nunneries, convents like that. Of course, a convent means there is a school and then so many other things start. But mainly monasteries and nunneries in the West. And there are other institutions which feel that these sannyas and others are all different means of filling your belly. There are no real vairagis anyway. It's better to be honest and maybe a compromise, but at least go on with something. So in our society, there are no viraktis, no brahmacharis and no sannyasis, only grihasthas. And they are all cool-headed. And so neither function on an eternal basis. Neither can function, forget eternal, not even on a long-term basis. Because there is something which they do, it's just a reactionary mode. And anything which happens in the material world, which is just in a reactionary mode, it doesn't satisfy the eternal longing of the self. So, Prabhupada is giving a very small purport here, and he mainly talks of some very, very important social considerations. At the end, of course, he adds that everything is traigunya. You don't need to follow this. At the same time, he's given almost 80% of the content for trying to understand as much as possible what is compatibility. So, I don't claim to be expert on any of these topics. I'm a dabbler in so many things. I have just gone. In fact, something which I got, I need to beg the indulgence of my Brahmachari Godbrothers here. They might think I'm just like a marriage counselor speaking here. So it's not like that. I also was nonplussed as to what to speak. But since Prabhupada has given something here, I thought let us follow, at least for this purport, let us be under the shelter of points which Prabhupada has mentioned here. Other points are necessarily valid, true, and important. So, having made my background, are we equal in this world? Right from politicians to spiritualists of all categories, they all shout from the rooftops practically that we are all equal. The great land of US of A, their constitution says, all men before God are equal. But then how are we equal? We have a physical personality. On the physical level, are we equal? Even Siamese twins have different personalities. Those who are joined at the waist. What to speak of other twins, what to speak of siblings, brothers, or people of the same community, caste, nation, race. It's practically impossible to find that equality. Are we equal on the mental personality level? There too we find millions of different desires, mindsets. Are we equal intellectually? There too, in a family, one brother or sister could be a genius, others may not be. Somebody may be mentally retarded. Are we equal on the ego platform? Well, we might say that we are both very egoistic, but still I don't like him. Or practically, because we both are egoistic, I don't like him. So on the ego level, there is no equality. But still, there is a constant tune of equality, find equality. Where do we get it? If we say that since we all become devotees, we are all equal. We are all equal. There is no other consideration. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam. Very significantly he says, this system of four varnas and ashrams is created by me. So therefore, we have to treat the mentalities, the propensities of everyone differently. What exactly is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? We won't discuss this now. It's beyond the scope of our discussion today. But suffice to say that we have to understand how these four varnas get satisfaction. Where do they find challenges? How do they cope with life's difficulties are all different. One situation could be a mouth-watering, salivating challenge for someone, and the other might just give up. He says, I can't take this. So, how it needs to be adjusted? That if we have a Brahmana, what kind of challenge does he need? The Puranas address a Brahmana as, hey, tapodhana. Somebody who's dhana, wealth, is tapasya. Now, a fraction of that tapasya would be unbearable for a Shudra. If a Shudra mentality person would be given a long 6-hour class on some intricacy of the Upanishads, he may say, my God, you know, give me some field work outside, I can do that. Or a Vaishya, he might feel, what's the point in giving so many points about one particular concept? You know, always that profit loss mentality. If you want to make it through, just make it in short, and other available time I can utilize for some business opportunity. Now, nothing wrong with that. His fiber, his the skeleton inside, the mental framework is made like that. So rather than condemn it, Vedic society gives us tools to use it properly. So leadership in any enlightened society depends upon understanding the particular needs, interests, concerns, to use some communications vocabulary, as to what could enthuse someone. And Prabhupada did give hints. He said, we want in ISKCON an environment where there is a daily challenge. Because without challenge, things become very stale and there is not much life. Now the challenge shouldn't be like a back-breaking challenge. That is the real knack of leadership. How to understand what exactly somebody needs. We may feel it is easy for Krishna to say that because he's a super soul. He already knows everything. For example, I am just always attracted by how Krishna treats two people. There are many, but two in particular. King Muchukunda and Sudama, the flower seller. Or even Dhruva Maharaj. Of course, Dhruva Maharaj, in one sense, he wanted that kingdom. So Krishna said, take it. You wanted it, you take it. But the flower seller, if you read the benediction Krishna gives, you will get all kinds of sense gratification which you wanted. You'll be very happy in this life. Now, technically, he has an audience, a darshan with the Lord. Krishna would have said, I bless you that all your material life becomes zero. Nice, isn't it? He might not have agreed. Because Krishna gave those benedictions and he accepted. While we have Kolavacha Sridhar here, this personality is not willing to accept even Vaikuntha Loka. What to speak of anything here? Now it is good. It is the highest. It is the ideal. But at the same time, it is true that everyone is not ready for the ideal. All mountain climbers would keep a poster of Mount Everest in their drawing rooms, in their offices. One day I'm going to go there, Mount Everest. But of all those who keep those posters or always think about Mount Everest, one or two or few may actually climb it. So having a worthy goal is itself progress. Because at least you're aware where you are supposed to be. So this is how there are so many ways in which people are different. There is one way where these differences come at a climax. Previously, people used to work for a few hours and spend a lot of time with their families. Nowadays, people spend a lot of time in their workplace. A little bit lesser family with their lesser time or almost equal time with their family. And there is practically not much socialization. People who have traveled abroad or those who are from abroad, they understand that in India, you usually strike a conversation in like half a second when you sit in a train or a bus. You don't need formal introduction. But in the industrialized societies where people don't spend so much time with their family, like once Gunagrahi Maharaj and one more sannyasi, they were in Sweden, North Europe. Somehow they got lost. So they parked their car and came out. And they couldn't read the map or whatever, they didn't have one. So they flagged off a car, they stopped someone. And that man stopped and he was like bewildered as to what happened. So he said, English? He said, yes, little. So he said, okay, little. We are lost. We want to go from one place to this other place. So he was thinking, why bother me? I mean, you can go to the nearest village. There could be a post office, a police station. You get all the help you need. So after trying to understand why he's so confused, finally Gunagrahi Maharaj told him, we from America stop people sometimes and ask them directions. It's not illegal or against the law. He actually was behaving as if, you know, leave me alone.
I am alive. So this kind of thing, you cannot have a community or a society or a nation of so many independent islands. As one poet said, no man is an island. So we are not. But somehow, slowly, as India also becomes industrialized, the way the West wants, we also will have the same kind of mentality. And therefore, in this institution of marriage or at the workplace, we have no instance of in the Bhagavatam where somebody is bored at his workplace. At time it didn't exist. But the other institution of marriage where two people come together and then there is a big challenge of compatibility. Prabhupada mentions in a letter to one Gaur Haridas that compatibility in the Vedic terms is called Yotaka. And typically everybody in this world is either a Devagana, a Manushyagana, or a Rakshasgana. That doesn't mean if you are Devagana, you are godly. Or Rakshasgana means you are a demon. You are in that Gana. Maybe in your past life or whatever, people who were demons in their past life don't have fangs or horns visible now. Now it's a different thing. But that Gana continues somehow according to the Vedic system. So a Rakshasgana man can marry a Rakshasgana woman, no problem. At least according to this system. They are compatible. But a Devagana and a Rakshasgana should not ideally come together because there would be incompatibility. Also, there is Pratiloma and Anulom, another very technical thing. A Brahmana can accept a Kshatriya wife or a Vaishya wife, rare cases a Shudra wife, but a Kshatriya cannot accept a Brahmana wife, he can accept a Vaishya wife, rare cases a Shudra wife. In no cases a Shudra man can accept any girl from the higher three. Now again, on its own, it looks very discriminatory. It looks anti-progress. And with Kali Yuga hurtling down with such speed, where is the question of wondering whether the passenger sitting next to me is a Anulom product or a Pratilom product? And do you? If you sit in a flight and say, this pilot, Mr. So-and-so, he comes from a family of cobblers. It's not that all the Pandits, Sharmas, Ayers, Ayangars will just take their suitcase and say, we go out, we can't sit in this plane. This fellow might land us somewhere in some trouble. It's simply not possible. My father used to tell me a humorous thing about the Indian Railway when it started. Railways, there'd be no water inside the trains. So the man would come with water. And he would say, Hindu Pani, Hindu Pani, Hindu Pani, Hindu Pani. And all the Hindus would bring forth their glasses and they would take water and they would drink. He would go to the other end, Muslim Pani, Muslim Pani, Muslim Pani, Muslim Pani. And all the Muslims would take the water. But the consideration was, we should not take water from the other community because they are different. They are like, we are called idol worshippers and we call them lechas. So this kind of name calling and thing continued. But some common sense would, if it have prevailed at that time, somebody would say, hey, what's the difference? You're drinking the same water from the same person. So this kind of superficiality continued for it, like the dying moments of those social barriers. And with rapid urbanization, it all collapsed. So there's an English saying, the baby goes with the bath water. So along with the bad bath water, the baby also went away. And that is, the social fabric somehow starts crumbling. And if the family institution starts getting ruined, if people have no impetus for, not that they have no impetus for family life, that means they are very much eager for Vairagi life. They want family life, but they want without the botheration. Prabhupada writes in a letter, If one gets ample milk in the market, you won't bother keeping a cow. So with the only thing available is physical gratification. If that is available in plenty, then the very reason for having a family, raising children, training them, it becomes a non-starter. There is no impetus for that. And that gives rise to so many social issues. You have people who are not fit for practically anything, neurotic. So let's say, even if such kind of people come and join a spiritual society, and they are all frustrated, confused, they don't know what they are made for, what kind of service attracts them. So although historically Prabhupada defends himself vigorously that as a sannyasi, I have nothing to do with marriages, but I'm doing it. Why? Because my grihasthas, they are sometimes excelling the sannyasis even in preaching. And it was true. The whole UK yatra was started by three grihastha couples. And Prabhupada would say with much affection and pride that they succeeded where the Gaudiya Mata sannyasis could not make a dent as much. So it is true. At the same time, back to Satsarup Maharaj, when he writes, it seems Prabhupada was not having the knowledge that we were capable of breaking our vows, we were capable of being unfaithful, we were capable of leaving our wives and children. So therefore we can say that Prabhupada took that risk, and he was a big risk taker. He was. Those who imitated him, they also had problems. But those who avoid the risks completely, there is no progress. Like they say, ships in harbor are safe, but ships are not meant to be in the harbor. They are meant to be having their voyage. So any reaction that we will have only married people here, or we won't have any married people here, there is no success there. I was listening to one lecture by Hridayanand Maharaj. He gives a very nice angle on something which was really, it was said, maybe sometime from the Vyasasan, that Raghunath Das Goswami, as he is contemplating in that time, how do I join the Hare Krishna movement? Of course, he didn't have this kind of wording, but that's what he wanted to do. It is easy to get Lord Chaitanya's mercy when you go through Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So he asked Nityananda, please deliver me. And Nityananda Prabhu gave him the instruction that you feed all my followers here with chida, dahi. Lord Chaitanya instructed him that stay where you are. Behave like an ordinary attached householder. One day, Krishna will see you through. So he had that faith. But Nityananda Prabhu described to his followers, Raghunath Das Goswami, he has a wife who is beautiful like an apsara. He has opulence like Lord Indra. And that is not capable of attracting him. Just see what kind of caliber this person has. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes a verse from the Bhagavat that his wife, his young children, his treasury, his army, his kingdom, his opulences could not hold back King Bharata. It's from the fifth canto. He gave up Malavat. Now Malavat means, Mala is contamination or pollution. But Prabhupada gives it a different gloss. He says Malavat is just like one gives up stool after passing it. The verse doesn't mention the whole graphic act. It just mentions Malavat. So it could be, Malavat also is used for feces. So, is your wife's stool, your children's stool, the wealth stool? Maybe, not maybe, some people thought it like that. So for so many years, people were told that all that you give up is the stool you are giving up. He says what the particular thing mentioned here is the attachment for it. The lust for your wife or husband or children or property or wealth, that is the abominable thing. And therefore, many families, they broke down. Many people had to go through severe traumatic situation just because of the wrongly placed priorities. To end, I'll again reiterate, I'm no expert on this topic. I just wanted to have something. This could be better said by our Grihastha leaders here. But I just thought that these points, which I am now going to say, they are taken verbatim from an essay by Vishakha Mataji, which came in the ISKCON Communications Journal. She just gave about 11 points on what makes marriage work, what makes it doesn't work. Of course, for the sake of the non-Grihastha community here, it is interesting to know that these points are equally applicable in any situation. So she first cites the reasons why families break down. First and foremost is weakness of character. If there is a basic flaw, then things can go very, very wrong. Of course, it has to be understood, it has to be dealt with compassion, and it's like injury. If somebody's leg is fractured, you may say, chant Hare Krishna. You say, I'm doing that. I also need some medication. So chanting Hare Krishna, of course, should be through all situations. But you can't make a man walk on his legs when his hip bones have a crack. Secondly, she also talks of incompatibility. She makes a very significant comment. Worse than being alone is to be with someone you don't like. You'd rather be alone. And therefore, this kind of thing alienates members of a family and it leads to breakage. Thirdly, she says, inability to hear, to be a good listener, or in today's language of trainers, empathic listener, not empathetic. You don't show somebody sympathy, but you just be a mirror, you reflect. She says she has heard couples praying, independently of course, dear God, dear Krishna, hey Radha Gopinath, please let him or her understand my point of view. Please try to change him. She says the better prayer is, dear Radha Gopinath, please show us the way. And he says that is much better than trying to change someone. Fourthly, she cites self-righteousness. Most of us, we come to the Hare Krishna movement, and suddenly we know that there are 4 rules to follow, 4 don'ts, and there are 16 rounds to chant, and then you are a member of the club. That's it. Many times, these issues are not the main problems. But something as simple as being a time waster, being not very tidy, being not very clean, or little bit of loose ends here and there, and then someone becomes the guru of the household and starts throwing instructions. For example, I was in an ashram, in a base where only brahmacharis stay. And suddenly one newcomer says, I have a problem. I said, look, I come here only not very frequently, once in a while. So don't bring all the nitty-gritty, small, loose change problems. Go to your person in charge here. But he said, no, since you have come, I would like to tell you that we have very harsh rules here. The overall coordinator is a very harsh person. At the same time, sometimes he doesn't get up at 5 o'clock. I have to wake him up. So I said, so what? So he should understand that he's not superior to me in all respects. So many times when people come together, we expect the leader to be superior in all respects. The leader may sometimes expect of himself, or he may expect that these people are subordinate to me in every respect. And they should be, otherwise they won't be the followers. That is not true. Everybody has their advantages. Everybody has their good qualities. Fifthly, she quotes about quitting. Of course, in a non-abusive relationship, Prabhupada also says that if the relationship becomes so abusive that one partner is just not following the basic tenets of Krishna consciousness, what to do? You have to split. And lastly, but most importantly, selfishness. That becomes the core. I come in this relationship, what is in it for me? How can I get the maximum out of it? And when there is no question of giving, it's just a matter of time. And what she says works. Enthusiasm. I made a word search as to how this word came about. Its Greek meaning says entheos, in God, literally. So a person who is enthusiastic is somebody who is showing strong feelings of God realization. Theo is a word denotes God. So a religious word or a spiritual word gradually became spread, and anybody eager for doing anything became enthusiastic. But actually somebody eager for spiritual life, that's enthusiasm. Secondly, she says gratitude. To remain in a mindset of gratitude. Whatever it might be, that feeling of, I have to say thank you, that goes a long way. Thirdly, affection. It's not true that one likes somebody completely or one dislikes someone completely. In social intercourse, social interaction, there's always some kind of affection. And the marriage institution is meant to increase that. Fourthly, contentment. Life is meant for new challenges. Life is also meant for understanding what we have gained so far. Srila Rupa Goswami therefore puts both of them together. Utsahan nishchayat. Both are actually opposites of each other. When you are too utsaha, too enthusiastic, you have to have some kind of dissatisfaction with what you have. Only then there is an impetus to go ahead. But nishchay, contentment, or patience means, I don't have that much of a lack, I have something. So both of them need to be managed with good prudence. Then they both work for the betterment. Fifthly, she says long-term vision. And which is almost when there is a instantaneous attraction and that leads to marriage. And that becomes a big problem. So that long-term vision has to be there. Srila Prabhupada in a lecture gives the example of Gandhiji. One day he had some problem with his wife. A big quarrel ensued. He said, get out. He said, what do you mean? He said, get out. So she went out. He closed the door, came inside, sat down. That whole night, he was practically thinking, what should I do with her? But then somehow he slept. In the morning, he opened the door and he found her sitting there. He said, I told you to get out. She said, I am out. I'm not inside your house. So he said, get out of my face, as they say today. She said, look, my father gave me to you. Where else can I go? And he said, hey, that's true. Okay, come in. Matter closed. So therefore, even Chanakya Pandit says, if you see two goats, he goats, you know, they prepare themselves, they like the duel, you know. They, of course, in a duel, they have their backs to each other. But it's two rams, they have their faces toward each other. And then they come and pah. In fact, he said, if you see such a thing, you may also have a quarrel with your friend. So, at least in Maharashtra, people don't see that. If you see that in the street, you move aside. You take your glance somewhere else. So he says, this kind of rams coming together and fighting, or in the autumn season, if you see the clouds making a big rumbling sound, or if you see in a forest, the Rishi Munis have come together and they're having a nice big meeting, and somebody is ahead and he says, so how do we organize a nice Shraddha ceremony for somebody who departed? Chanakya Pandit says, don't take any of these three things seriously. Why? These two rams, what is their value as animals? They're not two lions fighting over some territory. It's not that there's going to be a lot of bloodshed. They'll forget it in 5 minutes. If the autumn clouds are rumbling, rest assured, there is no rain going to come. They don't have any. What can they give? Similarly, if munis and rishis in a forest decide what to do for a Shraddha feast, it's not going to be a Shraddha feast like somebody is a rich businessman or something, that you're going to get 10 items and 5 sweets. Whether it is a Shraddha or a non-Shraddha, the same Kandamul phal is going to be served. So he says, don't take it seriously. And similarly, small altercations or problems in a marriage, in a family, are not to be taken seriously. There has to be the long-term vision. Prabhupada says, therefore in the US, if somebody says, oh, I have a problem with my wife, I say, oh, then I can arrange a divorce immediately. When do you sit? So that has ruined this easy availability. Lastly, for something to work, she recommends plain old Krishna consciousness. Why we have come here, and if there is a contract, there's a letter, again that letter to Gaurhari, Prabhupada says, that this institution, family institution, is a contract, mutual contract, for serving the deities together, serving Krishna together. And that makes it work. So, theoretically, we can, of course, we have to work as a society. It's a goal. This last sentence, that a devotee is transcendental, is a goal in front of us. I remember one devotee had said, Rupa Goswami says every grihastha has to sacrifice 50% of his income for spreading Krishna consciousness. Now how do we do it? Should we catch every grihastha by the scruff of his neck and say, bring your financials and right now write a check, 50% of your amount, and manage whatever you want in this rest of the 50%. I don't think we may have any left in the society. So one devotee said, look, if I take a simple British yearly income of £22,000, in Bombay's terms, let's say a simple income of, say, 1 lakh rupees, 1,20,000 a year, 10,000, I hope I'm not too off the mark, too low or too high. But if 10,000 is something which you need to survive, then your house rent, electricity, fees of children, maintenance, food bill, all this could go to up to maybe a lakh or something, lakh and 10,000. Give some leeway for furniture buying or some yatras mainly. So the rest of the 10,000, if you give 5,000 to Krishna, you should be happy. You are following Rupa Goswami's principle. It made sense. He's leading a serious devotee's life and he's thinking that I want to give 50%. At this time, one senior leader cautioned that, wait a minute, instead of winging around something and falsely claiming that I am following Rupa Goswami, why not admit that it is not possible for me now? Because the ideal situation would be to immediately cut out 50%, give it to Krishna and forget it, and then arrange your life between that. If it is not possible, like keep Mount Everest as your goal, but between that time you can at least go to Bhima Shankar or at least Hanuman Tekri. At least that, if we conquer regularly, that also is counted. Similarly, that when there is a marriage between two devotees, it is transcendental. So if the marriage is transcendental, then the quarrels are transcendental, the slappings, the beatings are transcendental, the divorce transcendental, the children getting neurotic, psychiatric cases, that is transcendental, the huge bills we have to pay, is that transcendental? Somewhere it has to stop. Like someone, that story, the boy says, hey, the emperor has no clothes. So it was time that certain devotees did speak out. Like the story, the emperor is naked. Our families are crumbling. And therefore, now that there is a renewed, at least, interest, and we can say that one strength of this community over here is a strong affection. I can speak from my angle as a member of the Brahmachari community here. The strong affection, that feeling of parental love which we get from our grihasthas, sannyasis, vanaprasthis, we may have few. In fact, they are also very much needed. Rabindra Swarup said, Prabhu said, the vanaprastha ashram is the only ashram which doesn't have any problem in ISKCON, because it doesn't exist. So that need not be the case. Just like, that's why the Shastras say the four ashrams are like the belly, the legs, the arm, and the head. Imagine a living being with any less. Would you like to sit near a person who's legless, bellyless, armless? Or you would like to sit near somebody whose arm has been cut off? It's ghastly. So all these four, they need to be developed. That is our goal. Forgive me if I have spoken something beyond my realization. I'm sure I have. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Grantharashmat Bhagavat Mahapurana ki. Yeah.